welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Producer Paul. It's nice to be in studio again.
Always nice to have you here.
Thank you. You know, I'm so looking forward to our show today. After three consecutive shows of deep and heavy philosophy, today is all about fun. Yippee. My guest, Michaela Renee Johnson, practices and preaches a life of excitement and joy, and most of all, happiness. Yes, we are indeed allowed to pursue happiness in our hectic and troubled world. Michaela is an expert on the subjects of happiness and well-being. She is a best-selling author, psychotherapist, life coach, and successful podcast host. And she has authored what I'm calling a movement, which includes seminars, workshops, practical tools, and a book titled, Be You, Find Happy. So I'm happy to bring on our very special and fun guest, Michaela Renee Johnson. Welcome to the next chapter with Charlie. I snuck in on you.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I should be like, well, I'm absolutely miserable to be here. You know, and then talking about all these deep, you know, mindful guests you have, I feel like I'm like shallow and narrow-minded.
No, you are. This is not shallow and narrow-minded. It was not the guest. It was a subject matter that was pretty deep and philosophical.
Yes.
Which that's not our. We play a middle role. We don't play deep on one end or the other. But I am really ready to talk to you. And you know, so Michaela, before we get into what I'm calling the stuff, let's find out a little bit about you. And you know, I'd like you to tell me a couple of things. First, is it true that you were raised in a Sierra Nevada home with no electricity? I seem to recall reading that somewhere.
Well, you know, you're stepping it up a little bit. I actually grew up in a 27-foot fifth wheel with no running water, no electricity.
Wait a minute, I'm stepping it up.
Nevada.
A fifth wheel with no running water.
Yeah, and a porta potty in the yard.
So, you know, as we drill wells in Uganda, we should have drilled a well near your fifth wheel so you could just get water right outside the door.
Well, I mean, you would think so, but my dad, you know, he likes to get crafty and creative and do all sorts of funny things. So he bucketed up six-gallon containers of water every day. So we had 36 gallons of water every day.
Oh, so tell me, what was that like? How old were you when you did that?
Right. So I was in my teen years. And so at the time, it was positively miserable. You know, everybody around me is kind of enjoying coming into their womanhood and whatnot with, you know, fancy pants, new clothes and all the things. And here I am, you know, going home to what was a very rudimentary lifestyle. I was very embarrassed of it at the time. It was certainly before hashtag van life was a thing, and it was cool. So I kind of like to just say I've been trendsetting for quite some time.
were they old time hippies, or was there something else that was that you know drove them to do that?
Yeah. So my dad was actually just a really a person who was on the up and up, and at the time he was a home builder. The market crashed. Kind of lost everything he owned on a couple of spec houses that he had out. And rather than declare bankruptcy, he decided to sell everything we owned and start over.
Oh.
So it was a pretty honorable way for him to rebuild his life. And they live in a glorious, beautiful, 3,500 square foot home now with a, you know, the whole nine. But it was a long journey for them. It was a prideful choice that led to a lot of sacrifice. But from my experience, what I was able to do was learn at a very young age that happiness is a constant reset, that nothing is given and nothing should be expected. And that if you want to create in your life, you have to work to create. Nothing's given, nothing's a handout. And that really, you know, came to fruition later on in my life when I kind of had to tap back into these roots. And then throughout the pandemic, just really diving into this grit and resiliency that I internally had.
I love that. You know, I've written a bit on expectations and all right, because like you, I travel quite a bit. And so my last trip was my first trip to Portugal. And I say one of the successes of that trip is I had zero expectations. I've been all over in Europe, but I'd never been to Portugal. I had nothing to expect and didn't look for anything to expect and had a marvelous time. As a matter of fact, I'm going back in June for between 3 weeks and a month because I enjoyed it so much. And I think it was largely due to the fact that I did not have expectations. I let life happen to me. And I simply embraced it.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing there is, you know, when you let go of expectations, you create a lot less disappointment for yourself.
Yeah, and because if you do have expectations, and they're always, especially in, you know, you're going to a foreign country, they're not going to meet your expectations, you know, unless seeing the Eiffel Tower makes you happy, then I feel sorry for you. My next, well, it's just, you know, I'm not a tourist.
Yeah, I feel terrible for you.
I'm not a tourist. You know what I will do, Michaela. What I will do when I go to a new city is I will put my backpack on and I kind of get a map of the city, and I will say I'm headed that direction and I will walk, and I have no idea what I'm going to run into, no idea if I'm going to get mass transit. No, and so everything is a surprise. Every corner I turn is a surprise, and I just find it delightful that I am, you know, sort of becoming sort of familiarizing myself with the culture and different styles, rather than saying, okay, I saw the Palais de Versailles, you know, I saw the Notre Dame. You know, after you travel, the sightseeing things kind of grow less meaningful, do you think?
You know, one of the things that I just always truly enjoy from travel is getting to experience life from a different perspective. And I think one of the things that I'm always constantly reminded of is that Americans tend to live life really fast. We don't really know how to slow down. I mean, we're irritated with the guy, you know, at the Subway if he's not making our sandwich fast enough. And, you know, we're irritated if Starbucks drive-thru takes more than, you know, a handful of minutes. Yeah. And so my experience with travel is that it's always that reminder to slow down, have a little bit of gratitude for the convenience and ease of life that we really do have in America.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. I concur all the way. My second question, and I was reading again about you, and I really latched on to this self-descriptor that I'm the boho mom, and I'm sure boho is short for bohemian. Am I right about that? So I want to know more because I think that really tells a bit about your personality that may or may not come out. My guess is it's going to come out in the podcast, but tell me what that's about.
You know, I just kind of take an approach to life that is a little bit more roots oriented, a little bit more, you know, understanding, I think, for the fact that there's an importance of learning how to be a human. There's an importance of learning how to sustain life. And so in that way, you know, we have a farm, we have a homestead full of creatures. You know, my son collects the eggs on the daily. He knows how to cook those eggs. We have a massive garden and, you know, we do not buy groceries, all throughout the summer as far as produce and vegetables and fruit go. And, you know, this has really taught him a lot. There's so many analogies, for this way of living to just general life. And I think that it's been a really profound experience for all of us to have to understand, to live in synergy with nature and have a profound respect for Mother Nature and also a great appreciation. So it's You know, it's a very natural way to live. And yet, you know, we certainly go to the Target, that sort of thing. But for the most part, I try to create an environment that's incredibly peaceful. A lot of, you know, natural elements from wood to plant life and things like that, that create that serene sense of being synergistic with our surroundings.
Does that relate, do you think, back to your raising in the Sierra Nevadas?
I definitely think that at a young age, I started to have a very profound respect for, you know, for nature. And I definitely think that it has contributed to the way that I like to immerse myself as an adult in nature, for sure. I mean, if I don't get out to hike a couple of times a week, I start to find myself getting very grumpy and short. And so, you know, these things are important to me to just kind of reconnect with like this greater purpose and greater, you know, existential, like thought process, so to speak. And, you know, I find that when I'm very narrow oriented to what's directly in front of me, I kind of lose that like ease of existence. I kind of have a more difficult time being able to shrug something off, or, you know, let things that I read on the news or whatever not, you know, get me riled up and wanting to curse at someone, kind of a thing.
Oh, and you know, that's why we're watching less and less news, because its whole intention is fear driven and intended to rile us up, and so that's very difficult.
Well, you know, as a psychotherapist, the propaganda that is unfolding from a mass psychosis standpoint that is doing nothing but damage to the mental health and, you know, human psyche of the world, it has been one of the biggest challenges, because from a very early on standpoint, I was screaming this from the rooftops, like, please don't suffocate our children. Please don't this and that. And, you know, I was met with a lot of backlash from, you know, just simply saying, can we just pause a moment? Can we just pause a moment and take a look at what the potential of what we're doing is? But everybody was so fear-based that they were literally running to a cliff without any awareness of what was ahead. And I think that's what fear in general does to, you know, the human psyche. And I often tell people when they're talking with me about this in my psychotherapy practice, look, I love to hike. I know that hiking is something I need to do for my own, you know, health, physical health, emotional health, et cetera. I am terrified of mountain lions. I hate the idea of stumbling on a cat, a big, ginormous cat on a trail. And, you know, this is a very good possibility for where I live, especially hiking alone. So I do my best to offset the fear, right? You know, I bring some pepper spray with me. I try to hike not during the times when they're hunting. I bring my dog. I do things. I tell people where I'm going and when I expect to be back. I do things to mitigate the risk, but I don't stop living my life, because once you stop living your life, you've committed to the end, right? You've said, I give, uncle. This is where it stops for me. And that's no way to live. You know, it's really not living at all. It's some certain waiting for your death is what it is. So, I try to look at mitigation of risk and, put it into a perspective that's acceptable for me. And I realize that everybody is different. I also believe that we've been conditioned for a very long time, from an indoctrination standpoint, to have a predisposition to buy into the propaganda and the fear perpetuation. I feel badly for those who grew up with some level of reliance and trust on systems. I didn't have that. I grew up in the woods, no yeah. running water, no electricity, yeah. no television, you know, fending for ourselves. And so for me, it was just such a different upbringing that when all of this stuff started to happen, it's like, well, that's, you know, you can tell me whatever you want from the television. However, I still have to heat my home, which means I still have to go get wood. You can't tell me to lock down. It's March and it's snowing.
Right.
I gotta go get wood. I gotta heat my house. I don't have time to be bothered by this. Otherwise, I'm gonna die anyway, and it's not gonna be of a virus. It's gonna be of hypothermia. So, you know, in this way, I think that, you know, my upbringing certainly did a lot to contribute to the ways in which I'm helping people today, and it's not for everybody. You know, there are a lot of people that they have very strong cognitive dissonance and they don't want to hear it. And that's okay. You got to meet people where they're at.
Do you think it has to do with safety and security, that this is what we know, and radical change of lifestyle or one's thought is so fearful to us, and we, you know, there's a tendency to want to avoid that. And do you think that what's going on now and all of our issues, that there is this fear of change and the unknown, and I want to return to the past and what's safe, and so they're not going to venture out like you do and do things. Do you think that has something to do with it?
I mean, I definitely think it's a fear of acceptance, right? So there's a certain level of, because they say so, it is. And when we take that position where we don't want to, where we kind of want to stick our head in the sand, then we get into a situation where the world is still happening around us, but we can kind of avoid it for a minute. You can avoid it for a minute until you can't. And I think then that's when, you know, we start to see people having these profound kind of come to Jesus moments where it's like, wow, I was in denial. Yeah. And, you know, now this thing has happened and I can no longer be in denial. And I think that's what we've been seeing in the past couple of months, you know, and that's why I think we're seeing so many uprisings and things like this, is that you can only stick your head in the sand so long before that sand blows away and you have no choice but to see what's around you.
You know, it's been a boon for psychotherapists, because, you know, all of my friends, I have several friends that are psychotherapists, and they talk the same language that you are, that, you know, the numbers of depressions and obviously, you know, suicide and anxieties and so many issues have increased with COVID just, you know, exponentially. And that they just say their client lists are just filled. Are you finding that?
I literally don't have a free hour. I mean, it's like I'm playing Tetris to try to move people around and get everybody that needs help in. I added an extra day to my practice. I mean, it is definitely a wild time. And I've been a psychotherapist for 11 years now. So it was interesting. In the very beginning of the pandemic, everybody went into this kind of flight, fight, or freeze, a survival mode, whereby, you know, everybody was like, we're in this together. You're my best friend. You know, me and my spouse, my team member, we're doing this. Everybody went into this survival mode. Like, let's just get through this together.
Yeah.
That quickly dissipated. And then what I saw was, you know, couples that suddenly didn't have all the things that were distracting them from what was broken in their marriage, like going to happy hours, having dinner parties, traveling, et cetera, was gone.
Yeah, all the numbers. Right,
and the survival part of the pandemic was dissipated, and they're literally sitting in a room, you know, in California, probably 600 square feet, staring at each other going, who are you? Do I like you?
Yeah.
And so, you know, from that perspective, it's been very interesting to see how this has played out. And I think, you know, the silver lining in this is that a lot of people had to step back and reevaluate their humdrum, lukewarm life that they had been living for a long time. And it's kind of funny because growth does not come from comfort zones, right? It comes from leaving them. That's where it comes from. So on some level, like the entire planet had to leave its comfort zone, right? Like everybody individually had to step out of that in some way or another. And it's been interesting to see from a psychological standpoint, which is something that, you know, is near and dear to my heart. I'm always kind of assessing how that has played out from a humanistic standpoint.
You know, you're speaking of current events, you know, the COVID and, you know, our political divisiveness and all what's going on. Plus, your particular paths all seem to be drawing you. I can see how happiness and well-being are so essential aspects to your what I'm calling your movement, you know, as I look at all the things that you're doing around those subjects. Do you find pursuit with your audience, Pursuit of Happiness and Well-Being, do you find that being more profound now than it was, say, 5 years ago?
It's interesting. I would say 5 years ago, the pursuit of happiness was stronger. When I started the Be You, Find Happy podcast, you know, 150 episodes 3 years ago, I was kind of at the forefront of this idea of like being yourself and speaking your truth and this sort of thing. And everybody was like meditating and doing the gratitude journals and like all the things, you know. And then what I found was people were like, yeah, that's a crock of shit.
Really?
None of that stuff is working. This isn't the secrets to happiness. And that's when I actually started the But Why podcast, which is really a narrative shattering podcast. And you know, what's interesting is I recently had a potential client send an email out to the people that book my sessions for me. And they said, well, we thought she would be a great fit, but then we heard her new podcast and now we've just decided, no way. We do not politically align. And this is interesting too, right? Because politics and medical choice have really never been a topic in the therapy office. It's never even been something that's come up until the past couple of years. I mean, never before. And I'm a registered independent, just for anybody listening. I've always taken the stance that I want to have the ability to make an educated decision based upon each particular issue and not based upon a candidate.
I'm so with you. I'm so with you, Michaela.
but I've, you know, being a part of the medical freedom movement, right? Freedom of choice and speaking loudly about the psychological effects of what we're doing to our society has pigeonholed me or kind of cornered me into the position of like, oh, you're a Trumper or something like that.
Oh, is that so? Yeah. I was wondering which side of the aisle they would put you on. They would put you on the right?
Well, now. But the funny thing is, I have 150 episodes of a podcast where I'm clearly a hippie, right? I'm clearly a Bohemian mom. So I am an oxymoron. Like, I am literally a walking oxymoron. Nobody.
Good for you. Good for you. We're supposed to be that. You know, I have two or three definitions of me that I really admire, and they're meant, I don't think they're meant to be admirable definitions. One is that the liberals call me conservative and the conservatives call me liberal. And then people will somehow kindly or not kindly call me weird. And I find that such a compliment. I want to be weird. I do not want to find to be in the norm. I don't want to be in the herd. I have a,
right.
You know, that herd mentality doesn't get me anywhere.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been called everything under the sun over the course of, you know, having a public facing persona, right? This is something we expose ourselves to. And I had my first experience with this when I published Teetering on Disaster, which was a memoir about the environment in which I grew up. And then suddenly everybody thought they knew my life. And I felt like I was a goldfish in a bowl, just waiting for somebody to, you know, drop a rock in, kind of a thing. And so I learned pretty young in this process, like how to manage the feedback that I would receive. But when the pandemic started, I was really appalled at how intense everything was. And I was like, wow, this is coming from people who literally don't know me at all. And they're making these like character slanderous attacks. It was pretty wild. But one of the things that I have felt strongly about through all of this is that we, at the end of the day, and I don't care what topic we're talking about, as a human, you have an obligation to speak your truth so long as you say it with grace. And that is your duty as a human, is to walk around with some air of understanding about what is important to you, what matters. And then the second thing I say is I reserve the right to change my mind when presented with new information. And no, that does not make me a hypocrite. That makes me a good human participant. That's it, you know? And so it's been interesting to see how this has played out.
We are so aligned in that I am fond of telling people, whatever I say today, don't believe it too strongly because I could change my mind tomorrow with better data.
Right.
And or better experiences. It doesn't, you know, it's not scientific. It's better experiences and better knowledge. And that if I'm wrong, you know, I'm not going to be hard-nosed and stick myself into a box and and not allowed to grow and expand beyond that. So I really do agree with that.
And I want to dialogue with people, and I want to disagree, because that place of discomfort is where I do my most growth. And that's true for everybody, right? So if I'm just surrounding myself with a bunch of people that nod and agree and tell me, like, you're amazing and wonderful and I totally concur, I'm stuck, right? I'm in this fixed mindset of like, oh, I've got it figured out. I don't need to do anything. By having people who are willing to have a graceful conversation, and I like to say a calm conversation, I'm growing, you're growing, and we're therefore expanding the entire, you know, energy on the earth plane, which is pretty profound if you think about it.
You know what I've encouraged my son? He's 29 years old, and he's a pretty good thinker. He watches these documentaries, and then he will become, after one documentary, he will be indoctrinated. And I have to say, you know, that's only one source, son.
Right.
No matter how much they quote and they sound like they're the brilliant of the world, that's only one view of a story. You can do best if you can turn around, do just a bit of research in the opposite behavior on the other side. If you can define and argue the other side, you are going to begin to encounter wisdom. You're going to be able to truly understand both sides of an argument rather than only listening to, let's go ahead and say it, only listening to Fox News or only listening to CNN, because all they're doing is they're just reinforcing what you already believe. You're not learning anything. You're just learning, you're building your own case, and, you know, I shouldn't use the word coffin, but, you know, you are building a very restricted and very limited case rather than trying to be open, like what you're talking about, to what other people are talking about and what is the other data out there. I think that's so critical for us to know.
And I think that we have a responsibility to seek it out. And I think that that's where, you know, we've become this kind of lukewarm society of laziness. I mean, not to judge people, but to say, look, if you're cold, you turn up the heat. If you're hot, you turn up the air or down the air conditioner. If you're hungry, you swing through the drive-thru. We don't have to work for anything. I mean, sure, we're all working our butts off, right, just to survive. But you really don't have to. I mean, compared to humans literally up until 60 years ago, we're pretty freaking lazy. And so what has that done? It's created this kind of mindset of like, I expect everything to be easy. I expect everything to come to me with a relative lack of effort. And if it doesn't, I'm losing my mind, don't know how to handle my life, and frankly, I'm probably having a difficult time getting out of bed.
Yeah, because we have not been educated. That's a whole different conversation, but our educational system, I think, could be improved.
Is dumbing us down?
Yeah. could be improved. And the one thing that is not taught is how to think. I want to take a break, and I want to really go into Be You, Find Happy. But before I do that, I have just a little bit of introductory. So I read on your website, and that's MichaelaRenee.com, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, it's easier to send people to BeYouFindHappy.com. BeYouFindHappy.com, because my name's difficult.
Oh, BE. Well, we'll get that at the end, and we'll get that right. But on your website, you quote Carl Jung, and you say, the privilege of a lifetime is to become who we truly are. Let me repeat that. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who we truly are. Now, I love that. I love Jung. I'm a big follower of Jung. But I ask, why do we have to become who we are, Michaela? Why aren't we just who we are by nature? I mean, this is who we are. Why are we not who we are?
Going to commercial break, or am I answering?
No, you're answering.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was the teaser to get people to come back to find out.
That would have been a good teaser, wouldn't it? Yeah. Oh, well. Missed opportunity.
Dun, dun, dun. There we go. We built up the climax there. So, you know, I think because from a very young age, we have everybody telling us how to be. I think that's just really what it comes down to. And so we start to determine that in order to fit in socially, we have to do what everyone else wants us to do and become what everyone else wants us to become. And look at this, right? Just think of when you're 12 years old and somebody asks you this question. Everybody's been asked this question. What do you want to be when you grow up? Well, by asking that question, I am literally telling you there's only one thing, so pick it and be careful, right? Yeah. I'm not saying, tell me all the things you want to experience in this lifetime. And that question is just a perfect example of the reason that we have to spend the rest of our lives working backwards, right? To become who we truly are, because we spent the first half of our lives trying to be what everyone else wants us to be.
And especially, you know, the beginning influential structure is our parents, where, you know, meant out of full good intent, we are, as I talked about in my last show, which was on cults, by the way, we are indoctrinated from the womb. It's good to... we're being taught good things, but we are taught narrowly, and then we hit adolescence and all of this stuff hits the fan and we're not sure where to turn, and it is it's difficult for us, as you said, to find out who am I when I was told this is who I am by my parents. Now my peers are telling me something different. I'm reading, I'm thinking, and I'm in this cauldron, this witch's brew that I don't know who I am.
You know, as you're talking about the indoctrination from the womb, I'm thinking about my own son and how, you know, I was like, he's coming into my life and therefore he's along for my ride until he's got his own ride, et cetera, et cetera. And then at some point, like, you know, being a psychotherapist and this and that, I realized, like, I am literally in the passenger seat of his car. Like, from the moment he is born, he is in the driver's seat, and my only job is to say, hey, it's a little rainy, you might want to slow down. The only time that I am to take the keys or the steering wheel is imminent death. That's it. And that's really a hard stance to take as a parent who, you know, wants to make sure that they're raising the perfect little human and all these things. So I think that, you know, as you're talking about that, I'm reflecting on how we need to remind ourselves that, you know, the only time we're in the driver's seat is to our own life. That's it, you know.
I love it. That is great. And with that, Michaela, I want to take a break. And then we're coming back to Be You, Find Happy. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges with The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am so excited to have our special guest, Michaela Renee Johnson, and she is an expert on happiness. We've been talking about her life and how she came to where she is, and we've been discussing the narratives around our society today, and now I want to move to her book and teachings and seminars and workshops and tools and just a plethora of information on how to find happiness. And you know, Michaela, my first question, how did you find happiness?
I don't think I have found happiness in the sense of, hey, I've got happiness and it's in my pocket and that's that. I really think what I encourage people to look at happiness as is a constant reset, right? There's always someone who's trying to take it from you, or something that's trying to take it from you. Even if it's just the person that cuts you off on the way to work, right? But now my happiness is threatened because I'm going to be late and I was having a good day. So I think when we start to look at happy as something that when we experience it, we need to shout it out. Then we can start to realize and create more moments of it. So it's truly about being resilient and being able to bounce back when you're not happy, to pull yourself from that space and, you know, reach more of a plateau so that you can have more moments of experiencing happiness. You know, they say misery loves company. People love to be mad, and then they want to stay mad, and then they want everyone else around them to be mad or angry or depressed or bummed out or whatever. They want to drag everyone down. So I think that it's really about saying, I am so enjoying this, you know, amazing glass of lemonade I'm having sitting on my patio watching the sunset right now. And then whoever's next to you say, isn't this amazing? Isn't this wonderful? What a beautiful moment. And I do this all the time with my son, but I'll tell you this, I learned this from him. When he was 3 years old, I was in a mom mad rush, right? I'm like literally dragging the kid from the car to the grocery store, get the thing done, get back to the car. And he puts on the brakes. I'm talking in the middle of the parking lot. And I'm like, what now? You know, I turn around and he says, mom, smell. And it was this literal bush of flowers in the parking lot of the grocery store. And I went, yeah, I need to stop and smell the roses. Like, I literally need to stop and smell the roses with you. This is the most important thing. You know, they were at his height. And in that moment, he saw something beautiful, something that spurred up a happy moment in him, and he wanted to share it with me. And he literally stopped me and said, enjoy this with me. Look at this. Smell this.
And that's what you mean by saying it out, by proclaiming it.
Because
when you shout it out, it reinforces that which is inside of you. So not only do
Absolutely.
You help other people, you're helping yourself in that process.
Exactly. And so from that moment on, you know, I had this profound realization from this like tiny little old soul that I needed to slow down. Like, I really needed to slow down, and I needed to appreciate these very brief moments of happiness that we all have, because we're so busy moving on to the next thing that we miss them. And so, you know, have I found happiness? No, I'm constantly looking for it every day. I'm looking for it every single day.
You know, a friend of mine probably 4 weeks ago told this story, but it is so worthy of telling because I've heard it a lot. He lived in on a little hippie island of Vashon Island in the Puget Sound. He and his son was 7 years old, would sit outside this grocery store on a wooden bench. It's made from a tree, and they would have these sloppy, gooey cinnamon rolls. And his son would sit there, and his son was seven, and they're just sitting there, and they're watching the traffic, which is, you know, two or three cars every 15 minutes. And the son is just filled with all this goo and all this, and he looked at him and he said, Dad, this is the life. And I just thought, you know, from a seven-year-old, that's just, that is just, you know, he really caught it. I love that story. You know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to get a little technical because we've got to have a ground. I would like to know, how do you define happiness?
So do you want me to send people home with some tips, tools, and tricks? Because I could do that for sure.
That I have, is that included in your five tweaks, or is that something else?
Yes. So here's what I recommend. If you're trying to create happiness, right? If you really want to start, like you're like, oh, this is all great and hippy dippy, but you know, all the woo was wonderful, but how do I get there? I'm just generally a disgruntled, grumpy person and cannot figure this out for the life of me. This is what I'm going to say. Number one, when you wake up in the morning, commit to yourself that you're going to find one thing to be grateful for. I know this sounds really silly, but you know, my dad used to say that his dad used to tell him, I used to complain I had no shoes until I met a man that had no feet. And when you take that approach to life, it doesn't matter what you're going through. There's always someone who has it worse. And I'm not saying don't feel woe is me for 5 minutes, go on ahead, but don't sit and wallow in it all day. Find something to be grateful for, even in your crappiest experiences. That's number one. Number two, tell someone else they're amazing and wonderful. At some point in your day, pass a compliment. Why? Because in giving, there is receiving. So anytime you're dropping in someone else's bucket a compliment, your bucket's filling up two times. So that's really important, right? To see the shift on somebody's face, and you don't know what they're going through in their day, but if you're standing in line, you know, at a grocery store and you see someone wearing a really cool pair of shoes, or they got a nice hat on, or that you just notice that they've got a nice smile or something, just tell them that. They say, hey, I really like those shoes you've got on today, or wow, you know, you look really nice today, or did you do something different with your hair, or I really like your attitude, I think you're amazing or wonderful. Passing on these compliments fills up your bucket. That's something.
Oh my goodness, incredibly, just absolutely incredible. Kindness and affirmations. I happen to be blessed with a desire to tell people that, and it is so affirming. I the smiles on their faces, that I've never heard that before. No one's ever told me that before, and I know that's making significant impact on their life. And then when I've heard in the last, I would say in the last month, you know, some affirmations that I've never heard about myself, and I'm 72 years old. And you know, Michaela, they're, you know, maybe to say life changing is too large of a word, but they are certainly life impacting. I really agree with you.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that, you know, you never know what's going on behind that shield that person has on, and that little word can offer so much, and it fills up your bucket too. And then number three, and I could go on all day. Number three, get out in nature. I don't care what that looks like, because when you're trapped in the box, right, whether it's your work box or your home box or whatever box it might be, you're missing the beauty that surrounds you. And there truly is so much beauty surrounding you. Even if you live in a concrete jungle, you know what I mean? There is going to be a pigeon doing something that is going to give you that sense of, wow, I am an energetic part of something much bigger than myself. And, you know, to see the interaction between you and your environment is hugely profound and life-changing.
That's, now, I have to say, for me, that's very difficult, because I live in that tiny box, concrete jungle, and there just is not a lot of nature. And anything that is sculpted into sort of unnatural beauty. It's,
you ever seen those guys, though, that get down there with a magnifying glass in the grass, right? So I think that even the sculptured, manufactured nature that you have around you is still breathing the same air that you are.
I like that. I'll keep that in mind. So we just did three. You got number four?
I mean, do you want me to keep going?
What is the list, like 200?
I could definitely go on till tomorrow.
Okay, you know, a couple, but I want to, you know, you have some tweaks that I want to talk about, and I have a couple of questions too. So, and we've got about 10 minutes left on the show, so I'm going to let you determine which way we should go, because you know what serves your needs and serves our needs with regard to happiness and well-being.
Okay, so what would you like to explore?
Okay, let me do this. I am curious, in our quest for happiness, we have obstacles of stress and anxiety play a tremendous role in preventing us from accomplishing or from acquiring what we would like to acquire. How do we overcome these stresses, anxieties, you refer to setbacks, these problems that seem to, we always make problems worse than the assets or the good things. How do we keep ourselves from just dwelling on the negative?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of different viewpoints on that, and I'll share another son's story because he's this profound little being. But, you know, there was one point in which he was getting really frustrated with a toy, like he could not figure it out. And, you know, he wanted to hand it to me, and he wanted me to solve it for him. Obviously, he was very young, 3-4 years old. I could have solved it in 1.2 seconds. However, that would not have done him any good or me any good. And so I looked at him and I said, you know, I can see that this is very frustrating for you. I can see that this is causing you a lot of angst. I think you should take a break, take a breath, and come back to it. And I know that you have everything that you need inside of you to solve this. And when you do, you're going to feel really proud of yourself. And so he's a little, you know, meditation kid because he grew up with a psychobabble mom. So he takes a deep breath, and then he goes back and he sits down with his
toy. What is his age? I need to have sort of a context here.
He's 10 now.
Okay.
And so he comes back because he had a little, had a little timeout cushion that he could go and sit at. And it's so funny. When he's young, he would say, "I'm putting myself on timeout," because he knew he needed a break, right? And I'm like, "Dude, I put myself on timeout all the time." So he learned that this was like a little special space that he could go and sit and just decompress. And it wasn't like a bad thing. It wasn't a punishment. It was just, hey, we all hit, you know, time before overhaul that we need to like kind of chill out and decompress. So he does that, and he comes back and he starts working on his toy. And I'm kind of, you know, walking by the bedroom and I'm seeing he's finishing it up and he's doing his thing. And he comes out and says, look, Mom, you know, and I look over and I said, "I'm proud of you." He goes, "Uh-uh, I'm proud of myself."
Really? Like, oh my goodness. Your teaching is sneaking in.
Right. So this is so cool, right? Like, I mean, and this is true for adults too. Like, take a breather, like give it up for a second, right? Step back and get some different perspective on life and then come back to the problem. Because I guarantee you 5 minutes later, you're not going to have all those same emotions, which, by the way, stress, anxiety, it's all based upon cortisol. You know, it's screwing up your serotonin, your GABA, your norepinephrine. It's changing all of the chemistry in your body from an adrenal standpoint. And it is literally doing so for the purpose of human survival. So you are very rarely thinking with any kind of rational mind whatsoever. You're coming at it from a sheer, like, panic survive mode. So just a little psycho backstory on why, right, what's happening for us. To step back, give it up for a second, take a breath, like chill out, and then come back to it with a different perspective. I guarantee you, once you work through that problem, the pride that you feel, the oxytocin that is going to pulsate throughout your body from accomplishing and overcoming is going to far supersede any of those negative feelings that you had, you know, 15 minutes before.
I agree. And I hate to put it this way, and I don't know how you feel about it, but meds don't hurt.
I mean, I am a psychotherapist. I don't have a license to prescribe, so you know, I my approach is a little bit different. But I always tell people, like, look, sometimes if I were to put you out on a major league baseball field with really no experience or, you know, practice on this, you're probably going to get hit in the face by a baseball at about, you know, 60 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Whereby, and that's kind of life sometimes, right? Like, people are thrown into these situations where it's like way too much for them to manage. And so what I say with medications, like, sometimes you need it to take the edge off and slow the ball down so that you can kind of figure out the game.
And it is about slowing it down. It's always about slowing it down. My son's a baseball player, so we're deeply involved in that. He plays in the big leagues, and
awesome.
Yeah, we're deeply involved. Something that I read that is very important to me as someone that has a susceptibility to anxiety is that I read somewhere in one of your writings sometime. That the reduction of stimuli, that we have so much stimuli, and you put it in our environment, in our homes, and in our lifestyles, and that to the degree that we can reduce the amount of information and people and sources, just sort of cleanses our life. Can you talk to me about this reduction of stimuli that we're just so overstimulated with BS?
You know, we could literally take a look at it and simply say humans travel on the daily 70, 75 miles an hour. Humans biologically are not programmed to do so, right? We're not built like a cheetah. And we've created these environments where, yes, we have massive amounts of stimuli. Just think of all the data that's coming in when you're traveling down a road at 70 miles an hour in a car, right? Like, think of all that you're processing just driving to work, right? So I do think that a tremendous amount of downtime is absolutely necessary in order to reset. And I think that's part of the way that humans, you know, especially in America, we don't stop. We have our television on until, you know, that blue light blaring right in our face, sending us 40 million messages, literally right until we turn off the light to go to bed. Some people leave it on while they're trying to sleep. You know, I forbid television in my room. We have one in the house. I can't remember last time it was turned on. Anything that you can do to diminish that, like choose a bath, choose a cup of tea, choose a book, choose, if you hate reading books, pick up a little thing of poetry, get off your phone and wind down. Let your brain come back to human status. Otherwise, we're all going to end up as like these transhumanistic little robots running around.
You seem to write about that, I think, I don't know if it was an interview with you, but of the clutter in our homes. If we can reduce the clutter, we reduce home stimuli, and we walk into peaceful rooms rather than rooms that are just sending messages of busyness and sending messages of distraction.
And this kind of goes to that boho lifestyle, right? I have a lot of floor space, very minimal, very like limited. Visually speaking, there's not a lot in the way. And I think that if you just look at your room right now as you're listening to this, whatever room you're sitting in, look at the amount of clutter or the amount of things that can pull your attention. And then think about your mind. You know, generally the space that we create mimics the mind that we have. And so if you want to create more space in your mind, create more space in your physical world too. And that can look like a lot of different things. I mean, I know people that, you know, have not cleaned out their homes or done a Goodwill run in years. You know, how much of that are you actually using, and why are you allowing it to take up space? And if you're allowing physical things like this to take up space, what kind of people are you allowing to take up space? What kind of thoughts are you allowing to take up space? I think it's a very important part of all of this.
I'm silent because I'm pondering that. I think that's very strong. You know, how much do we allow external stimuli that can be other people or it can be our own selves, and that our physical environment in our home are a reflection of our soul, are a reflection of our neediness, and that should tell us a story about what we need.
Oh, I was just going to say, I totally concur. And I think that, you know, all of these conversations, I think, propel people to look at these things. And I think that we do get stuck in that kind of comfort zone and we don't want to think about it. We do want to stick our head in the sand on these sorts of topics. So I think the more that we dialogue about it and converse about it, the more that we can stimulate our minds in a positive way. That's a growth oriented way.
Thank you. I think I want to close with that. Michaela Renee Johnson, you are... you are amazing, and it has been so fun. The time has just flown by.
Thank you, Charlie. I had a good time.
Thank you. And how do you like people to get a hold of you? Is it at that website? And you gave me a different name for that website.
Yeah, beyoufindhappy.com. BEYOUfindhappy.com.
BEYOUfindhappy.
Y-O-U. Yeah, be you find happy.
Oh, really? Okay. .com. Is there any other way you would like people to get a hold of you? Or is that
No, that's really the best way that I recommend. I'm kind of bipolar on social media.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not very good at it. You know, my executive assistant wants me to upgrade my LinkedIn page and all these things. You know.
I go in waves. Like, I'm like, all in, I love this. And I'm like, I hate it. I never want back on.
I know. We're so self-critical. Well, thank you, Michaela Renee Johnson, for being on the show. And it has been a total delight. And I wish you the best. I think you're on to several different ideas that are helpful to people that need to know. So for everybody, that's it for today. This is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.